Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast. I am David Capes. The Evangelical Foundation for Biblical Research recently sponsored a conference at Yarnton Manor in Oxford. That's our project there. There was an Old Testament side and a New Testament side, but the one that I was responsible for with making it happen was entitled Restoring the Pastoral Purpose of the Parousia. How do you like those P's? Now, Drs. Janine Brown and Carla Dahl teamed up to do a project. Janine Brown's a New Testament person. She's been on the podcast before. And Carla Dahl is new to me. She's a psychotherapist. And apparently, there were a lot of people in the 1970s and 80s, and maybe at other times, who were subject to a great deal of anxiety. Some might even say trauma when it came to the church's teaching on the parousia. There are lots of stories that you could go into. They were concerned that they might be left behind. You remember that sort of phrase. I asked those two scholars to join me today on the podcast to talk a little bit about that, straightening that out and getting to the heart of that. So today, Janine Brown and Carla Dahl on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Janine Brown, and I teach New Testament at Bethel Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Carla Dahl, and I'm a retired professor of pastoral care and spiritual formation from Bethel Seminary and Luther Seminary in Minnesota.
Dr. Brown, Dr. Dahl, good to see you both here on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being part of this. We are face-to-face in Yarnton because we've had a conference the last few days looking at some of the pastoral implications of talking about the parousia and some good and some bad. And I was struck by you guys, your presentation, as one as a therapist and the other as a New Testament professor, how well it's knit together by your preparation. In a sense, I have experienced some of the things you've experienced in the past in regard to that. So I want to talk about that in a minute. But before that, let's talk Dr. Janine Brown about who is Janine Brown.
Well, I've been teaching New Testament at Bethel Seminary for over 25 years. And I love that work. And I work in Gospels, particularly in my work. Matthew's Gospel has been a focus, but I'm branching off into some of the letters, and that's been a lot of fun too. I'm also a translator on the NIV translation team. Most importantly, I am a grandmother to two little ones, Harrison and Daisy. It's the fun part of my life at present.
Yes, exactly. Dr. Carla Dahl, what about you, Carla?
I retired 2 years ago, and since then have been mainly working in my practice. I've had a psychotherapy practice for about 40 years, and it's a great way to be continuing in my field and to stay active, and I enjoy it so much. I also am doing some research into long-distance grandmothering. I have an 8-year-old grandson who lives about 7 hours away from me, and so on the road a lot, and eager to see him every time.
So where is that paper going to be published, you know? Well, listen, it's a delight to meet you, Carl. I've not known you. I've known Janine for a few years now. In fact, I'm using one of your books for my textbook this fall. Gospel is Story.
Oh, I'm so glad.
And so anyway, probably beg you for some help a little bit later on about that. But but y'all's paper, I thought, was very interesting because you wed the best of both your disciplines. Both one is a gospel writer, but also you, Carla, as a therapist and who's seen probably your fair share of trauma and some of that religious trauma and some of that been based upon what we were told growing up about the parousia. Mm-hmm. What was the big idea behind your paper, if you were to say?
Yeah, we looked at Matthew 24 and 25, and the ways that Matthew 24 particularly has been read as a window into the second coming, into Jesus' return, when much of the chapters, in my view, focused on the fall of the temple, and it comes out clearly in verse 3 that both things are going to be talked about. And one of the results of that is this felt need to kind of look for signs for Jesus' return, when in 24:36 in Matthew it's clear that no one knows the time in verse 37. It'll be like in the days of Noah. It'll be that sudden return. So be prepared. So that's kind of the theme is, what does it mean to be prepared when we're not to be necessarily seen? We won't see signs and we then shouldn't be looking for them. What does that prepared list look like? That was our kind of setup. Mm-hmm. And we interacted with our own backgrounds where preparedness was about being really frightened about what might come in a rapture. I had seen Thief in the Night in seventh grade.
And Carl, is that your experience too?
Well, yeah, we had the impression, I think Janine did too, but the impression that we could be left. We could be models for the Left Behind series, you know, and so being very anxious about what that would look like. Were we going to be acceptable? Would we be taken? It was anxiety producing.
And it was music. We talked about Larry Norman's music.
We listened to Larry Norman.
We listened to that as a presentation, which I hadn't heard in so long. I was in a Jesus music band, and that was one of the songs we used to do, right? Because it was very popular at the time, and it got a lot of response. But it was response based upon fear a lot of times rather than anything else. So we talked in your presentation a lot about anxiety and the anxiety that we feel and how we feel that. And you're talking about some amazing ideas about how anxiety is both sort of picked up and felt and both cognitive, I mean, when we're thinking about it, but also at a sort of a different level, a subconscious bodily level.
Right. And I think that subconscious bodily level is actually more powerful than our cognitions about what's happening. So being able to identify what is going on in my body that I might not be able to relate to a specific thing in the present moment because my anxiety is coming from the past. And so I think interesting things about our brains, a couple of those are our brain scans for danger 4 times every second. And so we're checking often about where am I safe?
So we're not even aware. I mean, we're not sitting there. Let me look for danger.
Is it program running in the background?
Okay.
I kind of wish we would scan for joy 4 times a second or scan for beauty 4 times a second, but we scan for danger. And our nervous system knows something 10 times faster than our prefrontal cortex, our thinking brain. We just experience physiologically as whole people the sense of safety or not. And so for me, the operating principle, as we were talking about our presentation, was for people who have experienced traumatizing events, having something come like a thief in the night is not pleasant. If you, as a kid, had someone sneaking into your bedroom and molesting you at night, you don't want anyone coming in the middle of the night. If you were a kid who was kind of abandoned and just left alone on their own, then being left behind is terrifying. And so being able to think about trauma that comes in event kind of trauma, like combat or a natural disaster, that's important to tend to. But this kind of small T trauma that is about developmental contexts that are dangerous, especially early in life, because that's when we learn, what is the world like? And does anybody love me? Does anybody see me? Does anybody care to meet my needs? And so those things get triggered in some of the ways that we preach or teach about the second coming, about the parousia. So wanting to be very careful not to hook those things.
Are there other areas that we preach and teach about? I'm not talking about sinners in the hands of an angry God kind of thing, but are there other topics other than parousia that we, if we do preach about it, we have a tendency to trigger?
Well, I'm struck by having done some work in Philippians and talked with some people. I had a friend who heard a sermon on Philippians 4, be anxious for nothing, and the kind of the strong theme that anxiety is a sin. And yet, in my work on Philippians in chapter 2, Paul uses anxious language related to his concern for Epaphroditus, that he he was healed by God. God spared him. But he was very anxious about it, and his return to the Philippian church relieved their anxiety, in fact. So normalizing anxiety, which is something I think Carl has talked about, would be really helpful, even as we preach on maybe texts that are about anxiety.
And I think exhortations to be perfect as God is perfect, you know, that that just creates a whole lot of anxiety for people who are raised in really rigid, rule-bound systems or who live in those now.
And are told all the time that you don't measure up.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. The parents tell you that, your husband, your wife tells you, you're just not measuring up, never do.
No.
And so that kind of a bullying attitude that that happens in life. Mm-hmm. So we think of God, then our image of God yes. becomes one of a celestial bully.
And this
a lot
is where
people
the
have that.
Conference, at our seminars these last couple of days, where I think Carla's words to me a couple months ago, as she spoke them again, really resonated. So I'm not going to steal your thunder, but
our anxiety about these kinds of issues, I think, comes partly from our God representations. Who do we imagine is going to reappear? Hmm. Is it someone who's safe, loving, and welcoming? Is it someone who's harsh, punitive, or aloof? What we imagine, I just think, especially for ministry leaders, we will introduce people to the God we imagine. So we need to be really careful about our God representations, that they have been shaped by our past experiences, by past relationships. Not just parents. That's a common misconception that we see God like we saw our parents. But the communities that we live in, the communities that hold us, either safely or not. So this is where I think congregations have a fabulous opportunity to offer some healing experiences for people who actually were raised in an environment or who live in an environment now where the God we imagine is not a relational God, is not a loving God. And that can be something we just experience again in that embodied way. We may not think it. I might know all the good doctrine and all the good theology
right,
in my
right.
head.
I'll be able to do it and talk
yes.
about it.
Oh,
yeah.
sure.
But
then,
at the end of the day, I'm feeling that from here down.
Yeah, yeah.
That something's not right.
Yeah. And the something that's not right is me. I'm not right.
Wow. So you looked at Matthew 24 mm-hmm. and 25, and you said earlier that the first part of that whole section mm-hmm. is really about what's going to happen between the time that Jesus sort of gave that sermon and the destruction of the temple in AD 70.
Yes.
But then there comes a moment
yes.
where Jesus turns to the coming of the Son of Man.
Yes, 24:36 and following. And he uses the term parousia, which is the Greek term for appearing. And in that context of Jesus' appearing, it's what we have called the second coming or Jesus' return. Mm. And so he starts to talk about it in different kind of terms than he's talked previously about how we will know, how people will know the fall of the temple will be approaching. So he starts to talk about its suddenness. And so the need to always be prepared, to always be ready. And then there are a number of parables that come that help us hear. Parable of the 10 young women who are waiting for a groom to appear for a wedding. And mm-hmm. The readiness theme really gets raised there and reaffirmed at the beginning of chapter 25. And then parable of three slaves who await their master. Two of them invest, and it's about money. A talent is money, and they invest really well. And the last one does not, hides it in the ground. And the theme of that is about faithfulness. You have done what is right. Good and faithful slave or servant. That language comes up for the first two. So we hear that preparedness for Christ's return is about faithfulness in that daily task God calls us to. Mm. And then the final parable of the sheep and the goats, final judgment scene, is really then to show us, I think, what faithfulness looks like. And it's about really tangible gifts, tangible acts of kindness and solidarity with those who have the least. Mm. They're called the least, which is a kind of a status term in Matthew. And we're to show mercy, justice to those least ones, surprisingly, whom Jesus is with.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of surprise,
like,
of the
they're
parable.
They're participating in him already. They're
right.
already
but
in Christ.
They were doing
Christ.
These things, right. and they didn't know it was for Jesus, but Jesus says, no, I was there. That when you did it to one of the least of these, you did it for me. So it really grounds the whole of the what's called eschatological discourse of Matthew 24 through 25, and especially the parousia teachings, in this idea of readiness by living faithfully in the moment day to day. So we talked in the end about, do we live faithfully, or are we ready by kind of looking at the skies, trying to find the signs for the times, or are we faithful and ready by just doing what God has called us to in the moment and caring for those around us and living out the mission mandate of Matthew that's very robust and very fully orbed.
And I think what's interesting about that from our anxiety perspective is that if we have had the unfortunate experience of experiencing a lot of trauma or of being abandoned or neglected, then surprise is not pleasant for us. And so Janine has talked about surprise, in especially with the sheep and the goats story. And don't ever throw me a surprise party.
No, I don't like them. No, I don't.
Yeah, don't want a surprise party.
Don't want it, because surprise is not pleasant for me, given my own history. So being able to say, how do I be ready and watch the skies? I will do that if I'm hypervigilant. And hypervigilance is an extreme form of anxiety where we are always watching for what could hurt us, even more than the regular human, you know, scanning for danger thing that just keeps us safe. Mm. This idea that I'm going to be in danger is really difficult to manage for us as humans. And so being hypervigilant, hyper ready, hyper prepared for everything becomes a way of coping with that anxiety and that fear.
But what I'm hearing Janine say is the way that we are vigilant is through faithfulness.
Yes.
Acts of faithfulness. Daily.
Mundane sometimes things, but significant things to be in solidarity with those who have needs, who are the lowly. So that it takes our focus sort of away from waiting for Jesus and seeing Jesus in those around us that we can minister to, kind of as a different face.
So seeing Jesus before we see Jesus.
Yes. In a way. Well, and that fits Matthew really well. I will be with you is a key theme in Matthew 1:23-28:20. Jesus is with us, and yet we still await Jesus. That was one of the themes of our symposium that was so wonderful to kind of pay attention to, the ways Jesus is with us. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to discount that to say we still await the parousia.
In this particular symposium, we had about 13 or 14 papers, all which were very good. We hope those will become a book, and in the near future, we'll say more about that. But particularly, I hope you guys will get together and pull together your chapter and make that a contribution to our book. But we really are grateful that you're with us today here on the Stone Chapel Podcast. Thanks, Dr. Janine Brown. Thanks, Dr. Carla Dahl.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful to Annie Smith and the staff at Yarnton Manor. They did a great conference for us in a beautiful setting. A lot of great papers, including the ones you just heard about, were presented. Great scholars were there. This we hope will become a book a little bit later on. We'll say more about that as the time comes. Thanks to Kathy Capes for helping us produce this podcast. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. Thanks to the Lanier Foundation in the United States and in the UK for the wonderful resources they are making available. We're grateful that you are along with us. Until next time, I'm David Capes. Thanks for listening.